This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
6:11 now, and happy Monday. Man, there's just too much stuff going on and not enough show time to get it all in. But we will. On the lighter side, the Emmys last night were entertaining. The Bears play tonight. Hamp will be on. And my friend Tim Kuhl will be in later. He's written a book about Trump for children, which probably should get him put in jail. Trump on Friday did one of the more egregious things you could do to the media. We'll talk about that at some point this morning. Trump and Hillary both reacted immediately to the explosions in New York and Chelsea on Saturday. And both apparently overreacted or appeared to have overreacted in the beginning. It turns out they're probably right. As you wake up this morning, there were more explosions overnight in New Jersey, in particular in Elizabeth, New Jersey, where a backpack was found by a couple of guys leaving apparently a bar, restaurant, whatever. And there were five explosive devices in it, one of which was accidentally blown up by a bomb detonating robot. The idea was to disarm the bomb. The bomb actually went off. Nobody was injured because the area had been cleared for that particular purpose. There is a home that's currently being searched near a train station in Elizabeth, New Jersey now. In addition to that, there was another Jersey location, and obviously, as mentioned, in Chelsea, New York. The former police commissioner, a guy named Bill Bratton, former police commissioner in New York, literally left the job on Friday. So there's your first day at work for the new guy, Saturday. And on Saturday, he takes over, and the S hits the fan. Bratton's already doing media this morning. Saw him on CNN very early today talking about the fact that in the next few hours, these two incidents, and now three incidents between Jersey and New York, will be tied together. All of that ties to a mall in Minnesota, not in Minneapolis, St. Paul, but in St. Cloud, which is about an hour or so west of Minneapolis. And in St. Cloud, a man walked in and started asking people if they were Muslim. And when they responded, they were not, he stabbed them. He stabbed nine people before he was shot and killed as he tried to lunge at an off-duty cop who was carrying a gun. All of that over the course of about 24 to 36 hours, and it brings to mind, obviously, what's happening in Chicago. Are we in some amplified state of alert? We'll reach out to the mayor's office this morning and the police commissioner as well, and police superintendent, I should say, and see what they say about it. But the obvious answer would be, yeah, we'd be on a heightened alert state. Though I have to say, if there is such a thing as DEFCON 5 for this stuff, I suppose we're probably at DEFCON 3, 3.5, 4 most of the time. I don't, you know, the interesting thing, the sad thing maybe, and I can go to Dave and Mary on this too, I don't particularly feel a level of concern. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because these stories come up again and again and again. And while we're sitting here in a very vulnerable location in a windowed studio on Michigan Avenue, I go by the theory you got to live your life.
I agree. And don't you think maybe we've become, you never get immune to this stuff.
You do get a little numb.
We're used to it. We're used to it, to hearing these stories.
But the mall stories really get me, because there's been a lot of them, it seems.
It's wherever people gather,
lately.
Right?
And yeah, and do you feel weird when you go in a mall? I don't really.
No, it's great. I haven't been to a movie in a little while, and went to a movie this weekend, and I paused in the movie because there's been, you know, you stop in a movie for a second, you think, well, this is where a couple of these have happened.
Yeah.
And you look for an exit. You go, well, if you had to get out, where would you get out?
Yeah.
And you did look.
Yeah.
I do. Oh. I do that also. Yeah. I mean, that's different.
So, you know, life has changed, and I don't know that in our lifetime it's ever going to go back to where it was. It'll probably never go back to where it was, because we live in a world where crazy people have access to dangerous weapons, and dangerous weapons can do bad things in the name of whatever crazy they are currently in a state of. And in this case, it does appear to be at least tangentially related to ISIS. So, we'll see. It's going to be a hot day today. Hot, like early August hot. 85 and humid. I like it. We'll keep this for as long as we can.
We don't have enough of these days left.
No, realistically, here we are on September, what is it, 19th? Yeah, September 19th. We've got probably 4 weeks before you can actively expect, you know, a couple of overnight freezes, mm-hmm. that type of thing.
Usually around Halloween, we get a snow flurry.
Yeah. Yeah. So enjoy it while it lasts. Yeah. No complaining about the heat and the humidity today.
We need it for the World Series.
Yeah, the World Series could get snowed out.
I don't think so.
Chicago, if it was a Chicago-Boston World Series and there was a weather problem, you could be playing into spring training. There could be games canceled mm-hmm. until spring training. They'll go, let's just move it to Florida. We got to go there anyway. Last night was the Emmys. I thought Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty good job.
I did too.
Well, Kimmel's a good host. Starts out with Kimmel and a kind of a surprise Uber driver, a guy named Jeb Bush. Listen.
There's plenty of room up front.
Oh, thank you.
You're a lifesaver. Thank you, sir.
Hey, you're driving?
Yeah, I'm in between jobs right now. You know you can make $12 an hour driving for Uber?
I did not know that, but that's great. I have to get downtown to the Emmys.
Are you nominated?
I am, yeah.
Wow. What's that like?
It's nice. It's nice.
You think you can win?
Well, there's a lot of competition and probably not.
Well, here's what I know. If you run a positive campaign, the voters ultimately will make the right choice.
You know, it's funny you say that. My psychic...
Jimmy, that was a joke. Get out of the car. And shave that wig off your face, you godless Hollywood hippie. Jeb exclamation point.
That in and of itself would have helped Jeb Bush by 10 to 15 points if he had done that bit on the campaign trail.
He is funny. I thought he was hilarious.
It was like Bob Dole, 1996.
Yeah.
Bob Dole became America's grandfather the minute he was out of the race. You know, remember he did the Viagra commercial or the Pepsi commercial?
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel also had an answer for Trump during the ceremony last night. Mark Burnett was there. Mark Burnett, the man who started the scourge of reality television and brought it here from England. It's his fault, all of it. Survivor was his creation. Everything else spawned, and I do mean spawned, from Survivor. And Burnett's a Trump supporter. Listen.
Television can also tear us apart. I mean, if it wasn't for television, would Donald Trump be running for president? No. He would be at home right now, quietly rubbing up against his wife, Malaria, while she pretends to be asleep. Many have asked, who is to blame for Donald Trump, the Donald Trump phenomenon? And I'll tell you who, because he's sitting right there. That's right. That guy. Mark Burnett, the man who brought us Celebrity Apprentice. Thanks to Mark Burnett, we don't have to watch reality shows anymore because we're living in one. Thank you, Mark. Thank you for coming all the way from England to tear us all apart with your intricate plot. It worked. You sneaky little crumpet muncher, you. Who do you have lined up to fill the spot on the Supreme Court? Miley Cyrus or CeeLo? I'm going on the record right now. He's responsible. If Donald Trump gets elected and he builds that wall, the first person we're throwing over it is Mark Burnett.
Pretty strong. Pretty strong. You know, it's one of those where in the middle of it, you go, oh, this doesn't feel like a joke anymore.
Mark Burnett kept laughing.
Yeah, he took a little swipe at him later when he won. What did he win for? He won for something.
I think it was a reality show?
Yeah.
Or...
I don't know.
I think I was asleep by
The Voice, wasn't it?
Oh, was it The Voice?
Is that his?
Right.
Yeah, when 25 people went on stage.
Yeah exactly. Yes. And Burnett took a shot at Kimmel. Kimmel had a good moment with Matt Damon. He had a good moment with his mom making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for the audience. So he had a lot of good stuff. Julia Louis-Dreyfus wins the Emmy every single year for Veep, and she won again last night. She was visibly shaking while she was doing her acceptance speech, which was very funny. And then she revealed the level of her upset at the end. Anyway, here's a clip.
And the Emmy goes to Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Veep.
I'd also like to take this opportunity to personally apologize for the current political climate. I think that Veep has torn down the wall between comedy and politics. Our show started out as a political satire, but it now feels more like a sobering documentary. So I certainly do promise to rebuild that wall and make Mexico pay for it.
She then revealed, and I mean, she's shaking to a point where it looked like it might be difficult for her to even read her own notes. But she then referenced that she wanted to dedicate the Emmy to her dad, who died on Friday, and that he got to see Veep and liked it, and that meant more to her than anything because his opinion mattered most. And then she left the stage. But, you know, you could hear an audible gasp from the audience when she said, "My father died Friday."
And that speech contained everything. It was funny. It was, you know.
It was really good.
Trauma really good. And tragedy.
Lump in the throat stuff.
Yeah.
And she, by the way, is one of the richest people in Hollywood. She is heir to one of the world's biggest advertising fortunes. I believe it was her grandfather who started the first giant ad agency in the world in Paris. And it's family money. So she was loaded before she got Seinfeld or got SNL or probably before she left Northwestern.
It was her father, Dreyfus. It was an energy company?
I think it was advertising.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was advertising. I mean, you could be right.
I thought her father might have a different company. I'm not sure.
Well, then the combined fortunes.
Billions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but a sweet moment.
Very so.
Yeah.
Very sweet.
Yeah. So nice. So anyway, the Emmys weren't terrible, which is an upgrade from some years.
Yeah. And you know what? It ended pretty much on time, which is unusual.
Yeah. A couple of the later speeches were pretty much cut off. So someone said, thank you. The moment they got on stage, thank you. The music played and they got off. One of the best speeches of the night was John Oliver, who simply said, could someone play me off? Because I've never been played off before. And the band started and he left. We'll get some political sound from the weekend, including clueless Gary Johnson again. Oh, boy. But at 6:28, we take a break, come back with a big story in a moment on 720 WGN.
On my upper lip, there's a growth I've never seen before. And I wish that there was someone I could call.
6:39, you know what time it is.
The WGN hotline. I have edema on my thigh, pink stuff in my eye, and I need you now.
Ask yourself, who would you call?
I've got a stomach pain that's low, fungus on my toe, and I need you now. He's from Central DuPage Hospital.
The service of Northwestern Medicine.
Dr. Morse right now.
Get an update on the song, don't we? Dr. Kevin Morse joins us, brought to you by Northwestern Medicine Impact Every Day. Somehow we've got to wedge Northwestern Medicine into your theme song, Doc.
I know. John's going to have to work on that because... I don't know how he's going to get it in there because it just flows right now.
It's really strong
in my head.
I don't know. How was your weekend?
It was great. I was in Washington all week, so it's always nice to come back to good weather. And it's pretty nice to get out on the golf course, too.
Good. Excellent. How'd you play?
Not good, but you know what?
Excellent.
It's all right. Yeah.
And what were you doing in D.C.?
I was down there to meet with some other chief medical officers to talk with the AHA about a couple key issues. Cybersecurity was one, and we talked about violence in the workplace as well as violence on the streets and what hospitals can do to start to curb that. And what else? Oh, workforce planning. What are we going to do now with the aging workforce that we have and yet the big need that we're going to have in healthcare coming up here over the next 10, 15 years?
We don't have this on the agenda to discuss, but just a general comment here in regards to doctors getting out of the business, whether it's you want to blame it on Obamacare, blame it on whatever, and the need for more high-level nursing. Is that still a trend?
Oh, yeah. It's probably one of the biggest trends right now. You know, the way that doctors are going to get paid by Medicare is going to change dramatically over the next couple of years, and you will start to see doctors saying, you know what, I've had enough of this, I'm going to get out. And because of that, we really are going to need to look at these advanced practice providers, which are nurses that are APNs and physician's assistants, to kind of step up and actually be able to practice to the top of their license. These are very talented individuals, and if we put them in the right situation at the right point, we're going to end up with some great healthcare outcomes.
So if you got a kid in nursing school, the advice from you sounds like it would be go for that physician's assistant or that APN certification, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, especially for the APNs. What we used to see 10 years ago was we saw nurses that were in the frontline caregiving situation for about 5, 6, 7 years before they went into their APNs, their advanced practice license. What's happening now is that has shrunk down to like 15 months. So we're starting to see nurses finish nursing school, jump in and start in the workplace, but get their advanced degree much quicker. So there's pros and cons to that. You know, we love that nurse with a lot of experience to then move on, but we also know that there's a lot of young, bright minds that are going to advance their degrees quickly. So we just need to make sure we keep a good balance on that.
Is an APN what you used to call an RN, or is that different?
No. The APNs are RNs, but they're RNs that have gone on to get additional training.
I see. So it's an extra level. Yep.
Correct.
Got it. All right, 642, let's talk about the flu here and also invite people to text in any questions they have about their own health or lack thereof at 312-981-7200. Doc can't fix you over the phone, but he can give you some guidance. All right, so what do we know about the flu vaccine? Because it seems like you were talking about this a couple of months ago and said, whoops, looks like we missed on one.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, a study came out, and what we're talking about there is the flu mist, and that's for the individuals who are needle phobic. They don't want to get a shot, but yet they want to get some protection. The CDC and another study came out that showed that flu mist does not have great coverage, so they said in the United States, no flu mist this year. Since then, a Canadian study has come out and said, hold on, you guys missed the boat. Matter of fact, it's okay, it's not great, but we're still getting response rates of, you know, close to 60%. So will they relook at it this year? I don't think so, because it's way too late in the game. So I think we're going to be without the flu mist this year. So they may change something midstream, but I strongly doubt it. So I would really encourage people, even if you're needle phobic, try to get that vaccine, because it's really not that bad. I mean, one shot is really not bad.
And whatever coping skills you have, and obviously tell your doctor and your doctor's office that it's a concern when you walk in, so they know what they're dealing with.
Yeah. You know, Andrea Darlis is afraid of shots, but she got it. She's out of the country today, right?
Yeah. She was hoping that you would come in and do your annual flu shots with us while she was out of the country. I said, I'm going to encourage Doc to wait on that.
Yeah.
But then I did I did tell her, Doc, that last year she never got sick. And
right.
Because, yeah, I reminded
exactly
you of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know what, Doc? She just had a tetanus shot.
That's right.
So somehow she'll survive.
She's going to be an old pro. And actually, it's good that she went on her trip now, because, you know, I recommend people get their vaccines anytime after October 1st. So really, we're still a little bit early right now, although you can get a vaccine pretty much anywhere in the United States today.
All right. So let's ask and answer a couple of questions here. The ask is, what are the age ranges? Who definitely has to get a shot?
Yeah. So the age ranges are pretty much everyone. So, but the biggest focus this year is probably going to be on seniors. When we look at seniors, we look at, you know, we see about 35,000 people die every year from influenza. 80 to 90% of those are seniors. So another very interesting thing came out for seniors, and this is a big one right now. There's a couple things with seniors with the vaccine. One, we know that as we age, our immune response wanes. It doesn't act up as quickly as we want it to. So what we've noticed that over the last couple of years, what we've done is we've made a high dose vaccine. So we've made a dose, a super vaccine, essentially for seniors. Well, a very interesting study came out of England that showed not only we should be giving them the high dose, but they should also be vaccinated in the morning.
And why I looked in the notes and it's between 9 and 11 a.m. Why is that the golden hours?
How is that? Isn't that pretty interesting?
Wild.
So they assume it's due to cortisol. We have our level of cortisol hits the highest about an hour after we wake up, and then it drops down throughout the entire day.
So that makes your overall physiology more acceptable to the accepting of the vaccine?
Correct. The assumption is that cortisol somehow impacts the immune response. So if you're going to get it, you want to get the high dose vaccine, and you want to get it when your cortisol level is the highest. So getting it in the morning for seniors is going to be the thing this year. It's being tracked. It's being studied across the country. But it certainly sounds very fascinating that if you want to get a good response, get the high dose and get the vaccine in the morning.
All right. And for the youngsters, and I mean the super youngsters, you know, little babies and toddlers and stuff, what do we know there?
Yeah, you know, we are going to try to really make sure that we vaccinate children over the age of 6 months, because we really want to be careful about these kids, because they're almost as vulnerable as adults are. So we know that the immune response in children, they're still building up their immunity. So two things there. One is we want to protect them. So us getting flu shots protects young children, but also makes sure that the children are vaccinated as well. So grandparents, kind of like we talked about whooping cough, also make sure you get vaccinated, because you don't want to get this young child ill with influenza, because it can be deadly.
All right. And for everybody else looking for an excuse not to get it, you really don't have one, do you?
There are no excuses, to be honest with you. You know, even the people that said, well, I'm allergic to eggs. Well, we have a vaccine now that is not egg-based. It's cell-based. So those individuals also really don't have a great medical reason to not get the vaccine. And, you know, people that have had influenza will never miss the vaccine. It is 10 days of very, very, very uncomfortable feeling, high fevers, body aches. You just feel like someone ran you over with a truck. So once you've had influenza once, I assure you, you're going to get the vaccine, because it's not worth missing 10 days of work and feeling miserable.
Doc, you mentioned whooping cough. We have a new baby in the family, and I was told that if I want to go visit the baby, I need to get a whooping cough injection.
Absolutely, Dave, and that's very key. We look at grandparents and we say,
not a grandchild, by the way. Just to make that clear.
Yeah, okay. But in my case, you told me to get it, and I did. Mm-hmm. I got three or four. I said, just give me a couple extras.
You just kept getting them? Yeah, go ahead, Correct. Doc.
So we know that we thought initially that pertussis, we had lifelong immunity because of the vaccine we got when we were young. What we found out is that, no, that's not true. Outbreaks at University of Iowa, University of Illinois, now outbreaks all over. What we really want to make sure is anybody who's going to be around a young child goes in, and when you get that tetanus shot, get the tetanus shot that has pertussis in it as well. It will give you that protection. Whooping cough for adults, again, is kind of like influenza. It can be treated, but it's an aggravating cough. You watch a YouTube video of it, and you'll see what I mean. But for a young child, a newborn, whooping cough can be extremely dangerous. So we want to make sure that we don't give the young child the chance of getting pertussis. So get that vaccine if you want to be around any newborns.
And how far in advance do you have to get? I mean, does it take effect right away?
No, it doesn't. It's like all the other vaccines. It takes about 2 weeks for the body's response. So if you're feeling great and healthy right now, okay, you don't have whooping cough. You can still do it. But if you even start to feel ill, it's not good to be around it, because you will be contagious. But it takes 2 weeks for the body's immune response to actually kick up and make sure that it has a big enough response that if you were exposed to someone with whooping cough, you would be protected.
We'll come back, get some questions from Doc, from you texters, and also answer the question, hey, you may have gone to medical school, but the flu shot makes me sick, man. That's what we hear all the time. Dr. Most on that in a moment. Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine. Impact every day. Dr. Kevin Most. Northwestern Medicine, Impact every day. 6:54 now, and before we get to the lightning round of questions, Doc, I mean, we got a text from somebody a second ago. Said, seriously, Steve, seriously, every time I get this shot, I feel crappy. All right, so let's address it again. Does the flu shot make you sick?
No, it's impossible. The flu vaccine cannot cause you to have the flu. It's made from dead virus parts, so you can't get influenza because of it. Now, people might have they might feel a little achy, they might feel a little sore, their arm might hurt a little bit, but you can't get influenza. Now, that being said, if you wait long enough, you can get the shot and still get exposed to somebody within a short period of time. The vaccine hasn't had a chance to build the immune response like we were talking about, the 2 weeks needed, and you could still get it. But you can't get it from the shot itself. Impossible.
So if you have an umbrella, you're less likely to get wet. If you have the flu shot, you're much less likely to get the flu.
Correct. You know, we look at response rates on the vaccine, and they're not great. Believe me, you know, we're talking about response rates 70-75%. But if you were in Las Vegas and there was a game that you would win 75%,
yeah, you'd play.
You'd play. Yep.
You'd play. Yep. You'd play. You'd leave some money there.
Yep.
All right, let's go through some of these other questions here related to it. The flu vaccine and the pertussis vaccine, the shingles vaccine. There's a lot of vaccines we ought to be getting. Can you do multiple vaccines at once?
Yes, you can do multiple vaccines at once. So, you know, ideally we'd like to spread them out, but if push comes to shove, you can certainly get them both. The body is enough immune response that it knows what to look for, and it can make the antibodies for more than one. If you think about it, children, when they're getting vaccinated, you know, sometimes they get up to four vaccines at the exact same time.
The insurance folks, are they covering this for the most part? And if so, which vaccination do they cover?
Yes, they almost all insurances now are covering the flu shot. It's in their best interest, right? They can do a $20 flu shot, and it'll keep you out of the doctor's office, out of the emergency room, or out of the hospital. So the vast majority of them are going to cover it. And those that don't, it still is only $20. So people who are in a high deductible plan and haven't used their entire deductions yet may have to pay out of pocket, but it's money well spent.
What is high-dose flu shot, and does it cost more?
No, for the most part, you're going to see that the vaccine is going to be the same. And the high dose is what we were talking about before with the seniors. So it's a stronger vaccine, and it's really recommended for people over the age of 65 because we know they don't have a great immune response to the normal one. So we make a senior dose, a high dose, so that we can get a better response to protect them.
Senior 59, 60, how old? Well, by medical definition.
Yeah, 60 is going to be the break that we look at. But again, I'm talking vaccinations for everybody. So you can ask for the higher dose one if you want as at a younger age. So it's not that it's going to be a bad for you. It's actually going to give you a better chance for a response.
47 years old, can't sleep, 2 to 4 hours a night at most. Any advice?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have what we call like that insomnia time at that age. One, I would look at stress, and two, I would look at your sleep habits. What are you doing just before you go to bed? Are you watching TV in bed? Are you eating? Be careful about what you do and try to train yourself so that when you go to sleep, you're going to sleep. You're not going to try to do activities that are going to stimulate your brain just before you go to bed, whether that's watching TV or doing something on the computer and then expect to go to bed. Try to train yourself so that when you go to sleep or when you're getting in your bed, you go to bed. As far as trying to fall asleep longer, you know, people have tried tryptophan. They've tried other sleep aids. I'm not a big fan of them. I think that making sure you're in the right environment, that the temperature's right in the room and it's a quiet room is going to help you extend that.
Last one, and I encourage everybody, when you hear Dr. Most, get your text in early so I can get your questions on. Over the last few weeks, I noticed I get pins and needles in my feet and fingers. I have no back issues. Should I be concerned?
Well, you can. There's things called diabetic neuropathy, so I don't know how old the patient is or how any other medical conditions they have. But sometimes our circulation doesn't work as well in diabetics. And when that happens, we end up with people who have kind of pins and needles and numbness in their toes and fingers. So it's something that you might want to definitely get looked into. It's very common, and sometimes these are people who have diabetes and don't know it because they have the type 2 diabetes and they don't need insulin, but their blood sugars run continually high. So definitely something to look into with your doctor.
Great stuff. As always, Dr. Kevin Most, Northwestern Medicine Impact every day. Enjoy your day.
You got it. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, buddy. Back after this.
The Steve Cochran Show.
If we call your name and you are not here to accept, the Emmy goes to the next name on the list. It's called the Maggie Smith Rule. And this, if you don't know, is Maggie Smith. She's been nominated for the Emmy 9 times. She's won the Emmy 3 times. How many times do you think she's shown up here to get the Emmy? That's right, no times. This year she had a Sunday ceramics class that she couldn't get out of.
And the Emmy goes to Maggie Smith, Downton Abbey.
Maggie couldn't be here tonight, so accepting the award on...
No.
We're not mailing this to her. Maggie, if you want this, it will be in the lost and found.
Pretty funny. Pretty strong. I like Kimmel as host. He was cool. He was laid back. Felt like just doing a show. Kept it moving. They even got out on time. What? A Hollywood show that ended on time? Come on, are you kidding? The lovely and talented Carissa Thompson standing by. Exceptional athlete. And ESPN and Fox Sports and co-host of Extra. Let me get her up here on the phone. Good God, woman, when do you sleep?
No, that's quite the introduction. Let's hang up and do it again, just because it was so nice. No,
yeah, you just want to hear it over again. Make it your ringtone. Didn't you think Kimmel was pretty good?
I thought he was great. I mean, there was a few awkward moments. But, you know, I was talking to him on Friday about hosting, and you know, that's hard to do, even for somebody as talented as him, who obviously in that late night space, whether it's him or Fallon or Corden, it's hard to keep those things moving because, especially the Emmys, there's the musical performance are lacking.
Right.
So you really don't have the energy that you would have, let's say, in the Grammys or, you know, even the Oscars have a lot of musical performances because they have their best song category. So, yeah, I thought he did a good job. I mean,
the only swing and miss, like serious swing and miss to me, was the Cosby introduction because you didn't need it. I get the laugh he was going for, but it was beyond awkward. It was
right,
just
the awkwardness of everybody looking around.
Yeah, it was goofy.
Yeah.
Now, the fashion part of this, which this is going to shock you, Carissa. This is not my area of expertise. Did anybody swing and miss there?
I don't want to say they swung and missed. I mean, there were some dresses that I wouldn't necessarily do, but on the red carpet, I think, especially in this medium and everybody with social media, we all have an opinion. So I think that everyone actually went a lot safer than I thought. There was a lot of plain dresses, and usually we're used to seeing a little bit more dramatic gowns, but that's also as award season goes on. I always like to equate the Emmys to the preseason in the NFL, sort of warm up for the rest of them that will follow. The Golden Globes, people have a little bit more fun, and then the Oscars have the, you know, the very regal, big Hollywood kind of feel to it. So yeah, the Emmys was safe.
Yeah, well, let's go the other angle on this. And who had a great dress that you really loved?
I liked Kristen Bell's dress. I mean, she is very girly. I know you're also going to love this. That it was like it had sparkles and her hair was pretty. I don't know. I mean, it was very girly.
You can't miss on Kristen Bell. She's like the most likable human.
Isn't she? I know that Frozen thing really put her on the map.
Now, did you go to the parties?
I didn't go to the parties. I had up since 4 a.m. for my NFL show. So I went home, I watched the Emmys, and then I was in bed because we'll have extra today. Actually, we'll go and do a full recap of everything that happened. So, yeah, I didn't go to the parties. I was well-behaved.
All right. Now, we are Mario Lopez fans around here, but this is a perfect opportunity for you to tell us what you really think of him and whether he smells good. This is a question not for me.
He does smell good. Mario is, people ask me all the time what it's like to work with him. And he is, I equate it to drinking a Red Bull. He has so much energy. He's constantly moving. He's constantly doing something. And he's one of the nicest people I've worked with. He's always in a good mood. There hasn't been a day where he shows up on set and he's in a bad mood.
Yeah, no, that's that's our finding, our serious medical findings here as well, aligned with yours. Before I let you go, Bears-Eagles tonight. We're a little worried about the Bears around here. Is there any good news there?
Well, I have the pleasure of working with Charles Tillman every Sunday. There's some concerns, obviously, with the Bears team, but I mean, you guys are going up against a rookie quarterback. If you guys can't get a win tonight, I mean, Carson Wentz looked impressive in his performance week one, but you guys got to win. There's really, if you lose at home, it's a problem to a rookie quarterback. I'll say that.
Right. If you can't get it done against the Eagles tonight, I don't know where the wins are on the schedule. Dan Hampton will be on here in a few minutes to have his head explode.
That'll happen.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. All right. Well, nice work by you as always, and great job on Extra and everything else you're doing. I just hope again that you sleep at some point.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
See you later, Chris Thompson on Extra. And easy enough to find on social media. Dave, you're a big social media guy. Is Carissa spelled the normal way?
Yes, common spelling. Yeah.
7:22, Hamp coming up. We'll get to more Sound of Politics from the weekend. I just don't have the stomach for it right now. The Russian scientists are still being held hostage by the polar bears. And Google Maps, you know the Google Maps cars that drive around with a camera on them? And they take pictures all over. Google's put on a new, it's not a security device, but it's a way of masking your identity. Because what happens is you can pop on a Google map, and let's say you're sunbathing nude in your backyard. If the satellite took that picture at that particular time forevermore, when people look at your house, you're naked in your backyard.
that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So Google Maps has done a new masking software where faces would be blurred in the event that they catch an image that they can't necessarily repeat. And the funny thing about this is they actually blurred the faces on cows in a farm field.
Really?
Yes. So any human being, any animal, anything with legs, apparently the software picks it up as someone whose face should be blurred. So I just want people to know, those cows, their identity is being protected by the people at Google.
Do you remember when they had the street view of Wrigley Field several years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And you could see plain as day Lou Piniella walking out of a bar on Clark Street?
Yeah. Remember? Yeah. And Lou went, Hey, we're going to get Piniella on this week, right? This week, next week,
sure.
Talking about the Cubs? Yeah. I'll call him. At 7:23, Sandberg's here. You have a marriage question for Dave and I?
I do. And Mary.
Oh, this isn't just for men?
It's not. Well, no. Okay. It's for all people that have been married a while, which all of you fall into that category.
Yes, we do.
I'm
not up this morning.
I'm newly married. And I'm not sure if it's because I'm 40 and newly married. It's different than when you're 24 and newly married. But we were laying in bed on Saturday morning. Okay. And
now, when we say we, you mean you and your husband?
Me and my husband. Okay, my new husband.
No dogs?
Yeah. No. Okay. God.
All right. So you're laying in bed and a conversation is going on.
I said, hey, I want to talk to you about something.
Oh, boy. All right. First off, nothing is more frightening than those words. Dave, can we agree? Nothing's more frightening.
I totally agree.
All right.
Especially in bed.
And he said, yeah. And I said, what do you think our plans are for when we die? Are we going to be, are you planning on
happy weekend,
a cemetery kind of situation, or can we get cremated and being on a golf course somewhere, you know?
Shouldn't you have had this before you got married?
Well, no, not necessarily.
I don't know. Yeah. It didn't come up. I mean, we were only engaged for 61 days, so it's hard to get all those things taken care of. But we have to do some estate work.
And we
work.
Should say, because Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet, is expecting a child. it's one of those weird things you don't hear about in science, yes.
I have a different, Pat is a traditionalist, so I had a feeling. He, of course, thinks that we should be in a cemetery.
He wants to be planted. He wants the full ceremony.
Because
when
he right. He went to Ireland with his brothers and his dad when his dad was ill before he passed away, and they went and saw their ancestors, you know, and their headstones and all that, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I think the modern life doesn't really allow for a lot of time of visiting cemeteries. So if he's putting me in the ground, I want a commitment from him that he's coming to see me on a regular basis.
Oh, my gosh.
Otherwise, you want him coming
out. You think you're going to die first?
You know, you never know. I mean, it could happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I want to know that he's seeing me.
Well, a couple of things. First off, if you're cremated, you can still be in, what's it called?
An urn.
Not an urn.
Like
but
a mausoleum
you can,
or something.
Yeah, mausoleum.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
Or you can be on the fireplace shelf.
Right.
He
wouldn't have to leave. It'd be really convenient. He could keep you at the house.
Yeah.
I would like to, though, like cremate me, dump a little of me at the 17th hole at Glencoe where we got engaged, and I'd like a bench in my honor there.
I'll put a bench there.
Every time he plays around, there he's visiting me and we're happy.
Nice. That's nice.
That's actually very nice.
You put some thought into this.
I put a lot of thought into this.
Though, is there any reason you thought about dying Saturday morning?
Well, I want to be prepared because I want him to do what I want.
Will you leave specific instructions after you're gone for him to do what you want? Or will you allow him to spin out of control and live his life, which is crazy, but will that happen?
He can spin out of control a little, but he's got to help. My family is going to be lost without me, so he's going to have to do all the work. And if I pass from now until 60, I want to wear my midnight blue Diane von Fassenberg dress. It'll look nice laying down in the coffin.
Right.
I wore it to Arlington. You all saw it. It's one of my favorite.
You look great. Did it need to be dry cleaned before?
No, it's ready to go.
It's ready to wear.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I wanted to know if you're in, because here's the thing. He wants to be in the ground. Well, I want to be cremated, but I'm not letting him be in the ground and wait for some other chick to be next to him.
Well, why don't you compromise and be cremated, but in the ground?
What do you mean?
My father-in-law, for example, his ashes are in a box with a couple other mementos, and he's in the ground.
Well, what are you and your husband doing? I want to ask are you and your spouse?
We really haven't had the discussion.
You
know why?
Because
I plan on living for at least another 75 years.
Yes.
But I think cremated for me. I'll vote for cremation. Dave, can I put you down for cremation?
Can I let you know by like 8 o'clock?
So you guys haven't talked about this.
Right?
You haven't discussed it either.
You've been married 41 years.
Do you have to call Karen, Dave? Is that
that's okay. We could probably.
Saturday mornings are busy for Dave. Normally he's prepping for a game, so he doesn't have time to think about death.
I didn't have a lot of time this weekend.
Oh,
Mary, have you discussed this?
Yeah, we actually, my husband kind of made the decision for me because he bought our plots in our his little hometown when we were married. He goes, by the way, they were 2 for $100, so I got the plot.
He got them on sale.
I go, seriously?
Hey, I got a Groupon.
He goes, it's a great spot right under the tree.
Oh,
I go,
that's nice.
Oh, that's great. Well, what if I don't want to be buried there?
So yeah, what if I don't want to be buried with you?
It kind of goes back and forth with us. Okay.
All right, but as of now, you're going to be planted.
Yes.
So we got a planted.
Like cremated, probably.
We got a cremation / planting. We got a cremation. See, I would like my family to keep me around and really miss me daily. I'd like him to stay in like a perpetual state of mourning. That seems right, doesn't it? Fair?
I think that's fair.
Why don't you get stuffed like a dog and then just put you in the living room?
Hey, that's
just
not
your
bad.
Head.
Yeah, well, that's probably all there'd be room for. What if they just did my head and they had like one of those see and say things where you pull a string and I would say the same lines I'd said for years? Huh? How about that?
That is awesome.
I'm afraid the string would jam. They'd never pull it. But Dave, you're in the, I don't know, let me get back to you.
I don't mean to upset anyone here. I love you all. This topic is a little morbid for me. It's 7:30 on a Monday morning.
Oh, you think Pat felt Saturday? He's in bed.
And that ruined his whole day.
I thought it was kind of romantic.
Well, are you still fighting about it?
Well, yes, romantic. If you're more, if you're Morticia Adams, it's romantic.
And she's wearing braids today. Look.
If I'm Pat, here's what I think. Hold on. The insurance is paid off. She's going to suffocate me into sleep. She's going to take a MyPillow and kill me. All right, so cremation or burial. Please feel free to chime in at any time.
That's a text question for you.
By the way, we could have people call in and Mary could decide for them.
Yeah.
Based on what you told me, I think you should be cremated.
Somebody just texted in, she should be cremated, sprinkled into the ceiling paint, and then paint the bedroom ceiling.
Okay. Oh, so every time he looked up, he'd see you.
Oh, that's cute. Like little stars.
I always wondered what those little bumps were in the ceiling.
And then the very next text, I give him 3 more weeks.
7:29, big story next at 7:20 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
He's the worst quarterback that has played in the NFL the last 5 years.
Period.
Loser. And that's embarrassing. We look like losers.
And they weren't ready. Weren't ready.
He went from all Sean to some Sean to no Sean in about a month here. If you're not going to help us, get out of the damn way.
Period.
It's almost like he's paralyzed by indecision. And folks,
I got a better word for it, Danny. How about could it be possible this kid takes scared to death pill?
That's a lot of words. That's not a word. That's a lot of words.
I got to ask Doc Most about that scared to death pill.
Scared to death pills?
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask your doctor. And by the way, if you're scared to death for more than 4 hours, ask your doctor immediately.
Yes, indeed.
7:41. Let's go live to the Hall of Famer. Dan Hampton standing by. Good morning, Hemp.
Hey, good morning, guys. Boy, seems like it's been 3 weeks since the Bears have played.
Period!
I don't know about you, but I'm ready to get this thing started tonight.
All right, so you guys go on. Is it 6:30? Is that right?
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock, and we'll give you a little taste of what's to come. We've got a game against a team that we got a little score to settle, and all week long they've been referring to the fact that the Philadelphia Eagles are a team that basically was in disarray last year. It was a box of garbage, and they fired the coach, and they brought in a new coach and a new quarterback, and if there's ever been a situation where John Fox can say, you know, this is a must win, well, this is it. This is a must win. And a loss in this game is almost totally unacceptable. So it'll be real interesting to see how this team kind of, you know, puts on that game face and gets after these guys tonight. Because the last time we played the Eagles, it was almost a career change in the direction of this franchise. We got blown up on a Monday night in 2013.
Right.
54-11 or something like that. And the team has never recovered since. So Jay Cutler, Kyle Long, all these guys that were here a couple of years ago, they need to be telling these young kids, hey, not only do we need to win, we need to settle a score.
Here is the obvious, as far as I'm concerned, the obvious advantage the Bears have tonight. They're at home, so the crowd needs to be loud and proud. And you got a rookie quarterback on the road in one of the NFL's most famous buildings. I mean, if you can't dominate this from a defensive standpoint against this kid, I mean, from the beginning, I'm looking for a real dominance in the first quarter. And if I don't see that, then I think the Bears are in trouble.
Exactly. And you know, let's go back to, you know, the disappointing second half down in Houston. In the following days after we sort through the carnage, you know, I cannot believe how ineffective our offense was in the second half. And the fact that Dow Loggins, the offensive coordinator, was asleep at the switch. You know, every time we were in shotgun, we threw the ball. 82% of the times we were in conventional offense with Cutler under the center, we ran the ball. Now, it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. You don't have to be Dom Capers or some cagey sage to say, hey, you have to completely make over this offense. And not only make it over, but we need to be more diverse, but more importantly, get Kevin White involved. All I keep hearing about is how fast this guy is, and they never ran him, you know, except one play past 10 yards down the field. So there's a lot of things I'm expecting to see this team try to accomplish tonight. But your point, Steve, is, hey, this is a rookie quarterback on the road on Monday night. This could be, you know, pull up a chair. Let's watch the Bears go to and feast here. But for whatever reason, this team has gotten kind of I don't know what it is. It's kind of a strange vibe where it's, you know, we're kind of touchy-feely and we don't want to kind of come out and say, hey, this is a game we have to win. We have to win it with our defensive front in our pass rush. Everybody's kind of playing. Everything's close to the vest. And let me just say this. Mr. Cat, you know, point spreads mean nothing, right?
Right.
Well, we've
right.
only been a favorite three times in the 18 games John Fox has coached.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And two of the this is the third time. The other two times, we were at home against San Francisco and the Washington Redskins, and we lost. So we have been, you know, John Fox, for whatever you know, for whatever good we've seen accomplished here the last year, hey, you'd think that we would have been favorites a little bit more often, but the two times we were favorites, we lost the game. So in so many ways, in so many exponential ways, this is a game this team has to win.
But you're favored by 3 points at home tonight on Monday night, which essentially means this is seen as a pick'em game.
And what is amazing is if you go through the roster and you look at the players, you know, Jay Cutler versus a guy playing in his second NFL game, you would think we would have such a decided advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I'm perplexed to understand where are we in this rebuilding sequence of Ryan Pace and John Fox, because you would think this is a point in the season where we should be 6, 7, 8 point favorites, but yet the guys in Las Vegas who know a lot have put it as a 3 point favorite. So whatever you want to draw from that conclusion is, hey, we're not respected around the league, and let's hope the team takes this as a little bit of a slap in the face and goes out and gets after people.
Well, wouldn't
tonight.
You think, Hamp, they would come out tonight absolutely sky high for this Monday Night Football?
You've got to be breaking the walls then.
Yeah, wouldn't you? I mean, this is a game you're playing a team that you should beat, and with a rookie quarterback, and your Soldier Field Monday. And I know, even though they haven't played well there, they ought to be absolutely, as Steve said, knocking down walls to get out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, not only them, Kaz and OB and I are getting together for calisthenics at 5 to get ready for the pregame. We can't wait for this thing to
start. I got to tell you something. The Bears need to do what we do. We have budgeted for breakable furniture in studio.
Right.
Because we know Kaz, OB, and Hamp are going to bust the studio up, and we encourage it. It's 7:48, more in a moment from Dan Hampton, and it's brought to you by your Chevy dealer, Chevy Drive Chicago, Bears.com.
An animal!
Dan Hampton. Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
The guy who knows how to win. He's had more rookie quarterbacks for lunch than anybody. Of course, tonight would be dinner. Carson Wentz. He should be afraid, is he, as the Eagles are in town to play the Bears. And Dan Hampton rejoins us, courtesy of our friends at Chevy, ChevyDriveChicago.com. Can you think of a rookie quarterback game that you guys went to town on somebody in particular, Hemp?
Oh, yeah. Many times. And, you know, and I hate to say it, but, you know, you would think that this young kid would be thinking, coming into Chicago in years past, this is the last place he wants to come and play
right.
a game. Well, John Elway got his very first start against us, and we put him out of commission by, I think, the second quarter. and you know, we need to change this kid's name, his last name, into a verb, as in Wentz. And
right.
that's exactly how you play young quarterbacks. But I got to tell you, looking at some of the tape of his first game against the Cleveland Browns, I know it's the Cleveland Browns. We look good against them in the preseason and the finale. I got it. But he still made real quick decisions. He got rid of the ball. He's got a big arm. He'll be as good as we let him be. And, you know, I'm really happy that Mr. Cat had that deck commercial right here before this segment, because it's all hands on deck. You know, last year we were 6-10. And in my mind, we took a step or two back. And then we made wholesale changes. Gase is gone. Matt Forte's gone. Martellus Bennett gone. And we're supposed to think, okay, we allowed those guys to leave, and yet we feel like we have a chance to be better. Well, let's go out there and show somebody that we are better. And all I can tell you is, and again, I've said must win three times. And if people, you know, are not convinced about it, if things don't go well tonight, and I could see pitchforks and torches at Halas Hall by midnight, because
right.
this is a game. Again, this team was a box of garbage. Chip Kelly was run out of town. They traded Sam Bradford. They cleared the deck for this kid to come in and basically take his lumps. And all of a sudden now we're supposed to think, oh wow, we really have to roll up the sleeves and go to work. Well, guys like Willie Young and Lamar Houston, even Leonard Floyd, our defensive front seven should really be chomping at the bit to prove to not only the rest of the NFL, but, hey, the home team crowd here, because we were 1-7 at home last year. We need a reason to believe. We need to see it tonight.
You know, both teams' secondaries are weak. Our quarterback is a veteran. He's got a great arm. We ought to be able to dominate that, but I agree with him. Throw it down the field.
Yep.
Test these guys early. See what you got. Why wouldn't you?
I have a hard time understanding some of the offensive sequencing, because, look, I look around the league and I see these young kids, these rookies, you know, and Stephon Diggs. We watched him last night. Remember when he was a sixth-round pick from Maryland last year, came in here with Minnesota and lit us up? I mean, Kevin White, yeah, technically he may be a rookie because he didn't play last year. But, man, where is the wherewithal? Where is the creativity to include him in a game plan that can take advantage of his special talents, the talents that made him a very high first-round draft pick? So you're exactly right. Let's put a little fear in people. Let's make them worry about defending the field, and don't let them basically walk up and clamp down on us.
Hamp, remember the two-minute drive the Bears had right before halftime in Houston, and you saw Alshon Jeffrey, the weapon that he can be in jump ball-type situations. He can just go up and get it. And I don't know why you wouldn't use that. And then he didn't catch pass in the second half, but I don't know why you wouldn't use that weapon as often as you can.
Well, early in the game, Houston, in an arrogant way, was basically thinking they could just, you know, single him and even in a zone, be able to take care of it. Well, after Alshon had the huge first half, they started putting a box on him, a safety over the top, corner underneath, and saying, hey, we're going to take him away. What else you got? Well, we didn't have anything. And we didn't make any adjustments. We didn't run any draws, no screens, no speed screens, no bootlegs, no naked bootleg. Now, all these different things. To tight end, Zach Miller was a non-factor. So, again, you're exactly right. You know, if Alshon is not being respected and boxed, hey, throw it up to him. The guy, I mean, you know, he has shown he'll come down with the ball 75% of the time, which is an amazing weapon and an asset. But if he is being doubled, now everybody else, you've got to figure they're going to be pretty much singled. Let's go to work on those other combinations and see if we can make some things happen.
It's Dan Hampton. Let's get predictions for tonight's game, starting with you, Dave Ennett.
I believe I called it last week. As a matter of fact, I said they would lose a tough one in Houston and then beat the Eagles, and I think it's going to be Bears 23, Philadelphia 20.
Yeah, I think it's going to be ugly, but I think it's a Bears win. I'm going to go 17-10. Hamp?
28-20. And, you know, hey, why stop at 28? Let's try to build some confidence. And like I said, the big picture about this game is not just, you know, a win. It's winning at home, beating a team we are superior to, and getting ready to go to Dallas to face another rookie quarterback. Yep. So 28-20, we get this thing done. I'll talk to you guys first thing in the morning. Go Bears.
Thank you, buddy. Have fun tonight. And Roger Goodell's wet dream is about to come true again, as everybody in the NFL could end up at 8-8.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you've only got two 2-0 teams in the NFC.
All
Philadelphia would be the third if they win tonight. And that's
it's ridiculous.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood, you know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood, well, kiss me good.
Live from Channel 9, it's Dean at 8:12. Saw our friends Jay Blunk and John McDonough on Friday. And John McDonough says you and I doing this is his favorite part of the show.
And he would like us to do it before every Blackhawks game.
He'd like us to do it in between the periods, in the breaks between the first, second, and third.
That'd be good.
I don't think there'd be any booing.
No. Not that's what the hockey fans come there
that's
for.
That's what they're there for. Hey, are you going to be cremated or buried?
I think I'm like to be cremated.
Yeah, I think I'm there, too. The reason I bring this up is, as you know, Sandberg, the producer of the show, she does a really good job, but she's also nuts, as you know.
Is she doing your funeral arrangements?
No, but she frightened her new husband, Pat, on Saturday. They were laying in bed, and she said, do you want to be, what are we doing about death? That basically was the conversation.
That's cheery.
Yeah, and isn't that what she said? What are we doing about death?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she wants to be organized, and wants to know whether or not he's going to be cremated or buried and so on in case she dies first. Now, I pointed out that Pat's definitely going to die first, but that doesn't seem to calm her down at all. So,
what was the resolution?
Well, the resolution is just the texters are out here and see what you think.
Just so you know, Dean, we did not come to a resolution.
Oh.
847 texter, is Mary really that crazy? I'm going to go with yeah.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I'm going to go with yes. 224, is she going to, is she that much of a control freak? She's trying to micromanage even after she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes, yes to that as well. 847, my husband's on a shelf in the living room with the two dogs.
Oh, there you go. That's an idea.
Oddly, they're not dead.
If I want the most attention, I should be stuffed in a remote control, actually.
Right. Now, hey, that would be a fantastic idea.
815, get turned into a diamond. Mm-hmm. And then he could wear it. Like as a pinky ring.
He's not really a bling guy.
So now you're managing his dead jewelry?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mentioned, Dean, that if I'm cremated, one of the other suggestions that came up about me was actually just to stuff my head. And
with what?
Well, I would go with Nerf. Nerf, you know, it's filling.
How about that foam you get at Home
foam
Depot?
Foam core.
That's very insulating.
I also suggested
that
we
get four or five cans for your head, but still.
That we get like a CNC string on the side of my neck, and when you pull it, you could hear clips of the show.
I like that.
Yeah, huh?
I'll put
that?
Seeds in you. You can be a chia pet head, too.
Hey, I'd have hair again.
Yeah, there you
Wow, how great is that?
Today's phrase that pays is... I was in a band called...
How about that? Every time you pull it, it's just, I was in a band called...
It's a new band name.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, that's probably the way to go. 847 texter, keep your head like the Lionel Richie video, and every time someone says hello, you say hello back. Or 319, get cremated. This is for you, Mary.
Yes, yes, yes.
Get cremated and mixed in with tattoo ink and then have him get a tattoo. That way you'll always be under his skin, just like now.
Forever, Mary.
That's awesome. That's good. Yeah, annoying idea.
He's not going to get a tattoo, though.
That's sweet.
I love that, though.
Yeah. Because my problem is, Dean, I want us to be together, and I know he wants to be buried in the ground. I want to be sprinkled at the golf course, and I've got an issue with that.
So if you go first, you don't want him to be happy and get remarried?
Oh, no, he can get remarried.
But not right away?
No. But you'd like to clear it somehow. Then him, myself, and that chick can get sprinkled at the golf course.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. A threesome. Yeah. Not the traditional threesome, the later in life dead threesome.
He better just go with that lifelong partner thing. Maybe he better not get married after
that. Gives sand trap a whole new meaning, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, so.
It's funny. It sounds like man trap, doesn't it? all right. Well, we'll continue this quest, but it's cremation versus. I'm with you, Dean. Cremation. I'm going cremation.
I like the cremation.
I'd like to see you sprinkled over Mel Gibson.
Like that.
All right, this is sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. When we come back, we have a lot to talk about, and most of it's Emmys. Before we do that, though, when we come back, I'd like you to lead with what is going on with David Letterman's beard.
Oh, yeah.
David Letterman is coming back to TV, at least briefly, and his beard is inexplicable.
Yeah, his beard is getting its own channel.
It looks like a prop. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor. Oh, 821, Letterman's coming back to TV. Dean's back at Channel 9. And it's kind of a weird venue, but he's interviewing the Prime Minister of India about climate change.
Yeah, it's a serious David Letterman for a docuseries that's called Years of Living Dangerously. And they bring in celebrity hosts who have been active in environmental issues. Letterman has, for sure, and went to India. Interviewed the Prime Minister of India. You know, maybe Dave thought he was talking to somebody in Indiana.
Could be, because that's where he's from.
Not India. Maybe that was just a typo to bring all this out. But they're talking about clean energy and India. That's going to be on National Geographic Channel October 30th.
I just think it's a shame that there are no mirrors in Dave's house. He's got plenty of money, but there's no way there could be a mirror because he wouldn't go outside with that beard.
It is completely Santa Claus-like now. It's not even a closely cropped beard.
I think Santa Claus would actually say something like, dude, the beard's got to go.
Yeah, it's a little unruly for sure.
Yeah, Santa Claus at least combs his beard, I think. This one is just all over. It's a mess.
Great place to keep a sandwich if you're hungry in a hurry, though.
It's unbelievable.
You need to talk to your pal Tom Dreesen about this because he talks with Letterman.
He's best
friends with him. And Tom told me that he spoke with him recently about this National Geographic thing. Tom told him to shave his beard off. And he said, no way. Tom's going to be... I'm going to be hosting Tom, actually, for a Q&A at the Museum of Broadcast Communication a week from tomorrow night.
Is he on, Sandberg? I know you're worried right now about cremation, but is Dreesen, I think, is booked this week.
Yeah, you need to get the T Dreesen in.
Yeah, I think he's in this week. All right, a couple other things before we get to the Emmys. Green Day show, no go?
Yeah, last night, big surprise. They were supposed to play at the Aragon this coming Wednesday night. They've canceled that show and their first four shows. On this little tour that they're doing, apparently there's some kind of illness that's going through the band. There are several people who are sick, so they just decided to cancel the first four shows. They are going to reschedule. Haven't said when. They said if you hold a ticket, those tickets will be honored at whenever it is that they reschedule, or you can get your money back either way. But that's very disappointing because people were really looking forward to Green Day at the Aragon.
We're down to two people to host Super Bowl halftime and be the big Super Bowl halftime show in February, actually in February. It's either Lady Gaga or Zamfir on the pan flute. What do we know?
I've got my money on Zamfir, but all the gossip seems to be Lady Gaga. Nobody is confirming anything right now.
Isn't that a little out there for the NFL?
Gaga?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I mean, they've she's toned down. I think she's, you know, way more toned down than she was in the raw meat suit days. No, you know, she'll probably do something a little outrageous. But, you know, think about some of the shows that we've had, you know, Beyonce, you know, being one of them that
really
pushed the envelope. So I don't think the NFL is afraid of, you know, anything that Gaga might do.
You've always been an apologist for the NFL.
Right.
Tim Allen's on TV with you tonight.
WGN, we begin running syndication reruns of his show Last Man Standing. It'll be on every weeknight, non-sports weeknights. From 8 until 9 o'clock, 2 episodes. So tonight, you get 2 episodes starting at 8 o'clock.
Used to be you had to have 100 episodes before you went into syndication. Has that show been on that long?
I think so. I think it's been on, I think, 3 or 4 years, something like that. And it's, you know, I've watched a few episodes. I got to say, I guess I'm just not home on Friday night or else just so brain dead that I haven't seen it.
Probably the latter.
First run, but I watched some of the episodes. It's a funny show. It's kind of like a modern day Archie Bunker. Unless there's sports on, Tim Allen will be on from 8 to 9 o'clock on most of this number 9.
Winners and losers for the Emmys. I thought Kimmel was a winner. I thought he was great.
Kimmel was absolutely awesome last night. I thought he was funny. He didn't get in the way. You know what? What really is interesting, he was clearly listening and watching the show.
Yeah.
Listening to and watching the show so he could respond to what people were saying, really quick little transitionary things that just made the show flow. Really super, super, super funny.
You want to hear some of his monologue?
A little of his monologue, yeah.
Yeah, let's play it.
Have a dragon or a white Bronco in it, go home now. Everyone in LA knows if you want to win, sit next to Marsha Clark. Are you rooting for OJ to win this time? Many have asked, who is to blame for Donald Trump? That guy. Mark Burnett, the man who brought us Celebrity Apprentice. Thanks to Mark Burnett, we don't have to watch reality shows anymore because we're living in one. Thank you, Mark.
So he, you know, talked about them. He talked about Maggie Smith, who has been nominated many times, has won many times, but is yet to ever show up.
Yeah, we played that clip earlier where Maggie Smith isn't there again, and he came out and he took her Emmy and said, we're not mailing it to you.
He said, we're not giving it to you. So another very funny one.
How about the Matt Damon moment?
I love the Matt Damon. I love, you know, they act like they are arch enemies. John Oliver wins the award for Best Variety Talk Show. That was the category that Jimmy Kimmel was nominated for. Just as Kimmel loses, his old pal Matt Damon walks out on the stage.
Can I help you? What do you want?
Well, just calm down, man. I missed the last category. Did you win?
No, we didn't win, all right?
And that's a bummer.
The Emmy for direct...
No, that, it makes a lot of sense, but it's... You must be really bummed out.
Yeah, I'm a little disappointed.
I'm sorry about that, and I think everybody else here feels really sorry for you. Come here. Come on.
Bring Thanks. It in, I really appreciate your concern.
You bring it in. Okay. I'll see you later at the after party.
There's an after party?
Never mind. Oh, hey, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Tell your mom I like them apples.
It's a great line.
Eating an apple.
It's a great line.
He was funny. There were some other really funny moments. Finally, they figured out something entertaining to do when they bring the accountants out and, you know, usually grinds the show to a
halt. Oh, yeah. We played that as well where Leslie Jones loses her mind. You can grab that online as well. But you know what I want to hear? I want to hear what you liked. Winners and losers. Who stood out for you? Who got screwed?
Well, the big winners were Game of Thrones, that now has more Emmys than any other show. It's got one more Emmy than Frasier did, so it's the most honored show in Emmy
history. Didn't know that.
Veep won Best Comedy last night. Julia Louis-Dreyfus winning her 6th Emmy Award as Best Lead Actress in a Comedy, and that is one more then Mary Tyler Moore and Candace Bergen.
Really touching moment, too, when she announced that her dad had died on Friday.
Yeah, she thanked her father, who just died a couple of days ago, and somehow she got through thanking him and saying that his opinion was the only one that mattered to her, which was really touching and sweet. And this People versus O.J. Simpson did really well last night. It won Best Miniseries or Movie Limited Series, but several of the actors won awards for that.
Do you think anybody? I didn't think anybody really blew it, or you know, was outlandishly bad, or foolish. Were they? Or did I miss something?
No. I don't think that there were any clunker moments in the whole thing. I'll tell you where the real surprise was last night in the acting categories, both male and female, for drama. Rami Malek won for Mr. Robot, very deserving. Tatiana Maslany won for Orphan Black, but they're up against the likes of, you know, like Kevin Spacey, Kyle Chandler, these veteran dramatic actors,
right,
who all got shut out. House of Cards went home with nothing. Silicon Valley went home with nothing. Fargo, nothing last night. That was a big deal. And same in the female dramatic category, where some of the top actresses in drama today all went home completely empty-handed, and this young Tatiana Maslany, they're both first-time winners. They go home and take the awards last night. So to me, that was the only shocker moment on the show last night. Very entertaining. Show ended on time. Kimmel did a good job. Pretty satisfied with all of the awards.
Nicely done by you.
Yeah.
It's Dean Richards. Who, by the way, if you have Green Day tickets Wednesday and you still want to go to a show, Dean will do the show at the Aragon, and he'll cover all the Green Day hits.
Yep. You have not lived until you've heard my version of American Idiot. Believe me, I live it every day.
Talk to you later, 8:31. And the big story is next on 720 WGN. Thank you, Ryan. Couple of plugs. Schaumburg, next stop on a WGN Radio Hometown Voices Tour presented by Allstate. That's this Thursday at the Trickster Art Gallery in Schaumburg. This Thursday. And what am I hearing?
Take on the night shift. Introducing.
Was that you?
That's not me. Not me.
We have random ghost audio that shows up on this show every once in a while. I don't understand it. The Trickster Gallery in Schaumburg, experience Illinois' only Native American-owned and operated arts museum. We'll have Lou Malnati's Pizza for breakfast. Why not? And give you a chance for tickets to the sold-out 2016 Blackhawks Training Camp Festival and more. That's coming this weekend, right?
I believe.
Training Camp Festival?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Saturday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go to the events page, WGNradio.com, for details, or WGN Radio's Hometown Voices Tour. It's presented by Allstate, Chicago's own good hands. And Saturday night, I will be at the Governor State University Fabulous Theater and Auditorium situation, along with Pat McGann. Very funny Pat McGann. He's been on the show. You guys like Pat, don't you? Of course you do. And John DeCoss and Rocky Laporte. Nobody funnier than Rocky. So it's Saturday night. Hope you can make it. And govstate.edu, there's events links there. We might even be on the cover page. I don't know. But if you Google Steve Cochran, Governor State, Saturday night, any of those, we'll get you right to tickets. And you can order tickets, and we hope you will, because we'd like to see you on Saturday. As a matter of fact, Rocky will be in studio on Wednesday. Pat in studio as well later in the week. Tim Clue, old friend of mine, Tim will be on the show after tonight. Tim has written a book along with Spike Matton, who you guys know. Tim has written a book about Donald Trump. Now, for those of you who know Tim, I don't think Tim's read a book, let alone written a book. But no, Tim has written a book it's a book for children. It's a book about Donald Trump for children.
Is it a biography?
Of Donald Trump's children? Of Tim Clue? Of who?
Of Donald Trump?
No, it's just a book about Trump for kids.
Okay.
How to deal with it, I think, as much as anything else. So that's all coming up as well. We'll get traffic here in just a second and then continue with the festivities. Before we do that, we've got some sound to play for you as well from the weekend in politics. Bill Browder is the name of a guy that is doing a National Geographic series of documentaries. And because the candidates don't talk about anything related to the issues, we're trying to cover as many of the issues here as possible. And we'll do that again in about 5 minutes or so. When we talk about Vladimir Putin, and you might be saying, oh, no, they talk about Putin all the time. No, they really don't. Hillary says Trump's in bed with Putin. Putin says, I like, or Trump says, I like Putin because Putin thinks I'm a genius. And then the idea, are they spying on us? How powerful is Putin? None of that's covered. And Nat Geo is going to do that, and we'll talk to the producer here in a few minutes. Probably. Kellyanne Conway is Donald Trump's campaign manager after Friday's debacle where Trump used some really legitimate war heroes as a front to promote his hotel. Kellyanne Conway was asked to explain it and explain his birther apology, which he continues to dump on Hillary Clinton. Again, with all the things you can put on Clinton, you can't put this on her. Mark Pent was her chief strategist. Mark Pent suggested that they exploit the lack of American roots. That's not saying Trump wasn't born here. And one Clinton campaign staffer, a woman whose name I frankly don't remember, was fired when she brought up the idea that Obama wasn't born here. So this is not a Hillary Clinton thing. Many things are. This ain't one of them. Here's Kellyanne Conway on Face the Nation trying to explain it.
For years after the birth certificate he was released, he continued to question it, continued to question whether Barack Obama was born in the United States and whether the birth certificate was a fraud. So when the campaign puts out a statement and said he ended it in 2011 and you've asserted that today, that's just not the truth, is it?
No, I didn't say that. What I'm saying is that it was President Obama released his birth certificate in 2011. Nobody confuses Hillary Clinton with Mariana Rivera. She's not a good closer.
So I understand you wanted to talk about Hillary Clinton, and this is an election about a choice. Donald Trump advocated something for 5 years that was a lie. Why did he do that?
Well, you're going to have to ask him, but I think that this is a sideshow now that the media seem obsessed with, John, respectfully. And again, he put everything out on the table on Friday. Those are his words. He does things on his terms, on his timeline. And he very crisply got to the microphone after honoring 14 gold medal recipients and also after showing all these veterans that support us, our campaign. We're very proud to stand with them in Washington, D.C.
They weren't actually gold medal recipients. They weren't in the Olympics. They were Medal of Honor recipients and all proud to support Donald Trump. The military piece of this, I'm good for them. They want to support Trump. Fabulous. Good for them. But the fact is, an empty podium and a microphone that was staged for Trump to address this issue wasn't addressed until the end. And Trump's lying. You know, I'm more than willing to say Hillary lies about any number of things, because she does. But in this case, Trump was absolutely lying. Meanwhile, Chris Christie was on CNN with Jake Tapper. Jake Tapper brought up the whole birther thing. Here's Christie.
Donald Trump, he clung to the birther lie for years. He still isn't apologetic about it. Do you understand why so many people, including African Americans, are upset with him over this issue?
Well, listen, I made my position on it really clear a long time ago, and Donald's now made his position on it clear, which is that after the president presented his birth certificate, Donald has said, you know, he was born in the United States, and that's the end of the issue.
Well, just as a point of fact, again, Donald Trump did not accept when Barack Obama released his birth certificate in 2011. He kept up this whole birther thing until Friday. That's 5 years.
Well, but Jake, that's just not true. It's just not true that he kept it up for 5 years. It's
sure
just simply not true.
It is true.
It wasn't like he was talking. No, Jake, it wasn't like he was talking about it on a regular basis until then. And when the issue was raised, he made very clear the other day what his position is.
Okay.
I don't know why Tapper let him off the hook on it. There is a series of tweets that go back 5 years and statements that go back 5 years. He never let up on it. Christie is lying, as he is about Bridgegate, unfortunately, and that trial starts today. Finally, Gary Johnson. Remember Gary Johnson? And what is Aleppo? Didn't bother him. Didn't seem to hurt him. No, he did not make the first debate a week from tonight, but Gary Johnson didn't help his cause this weekend after the New York City explosion. Can we get him a smartphone with a news feed? Can we get him something that keeps... Can we get him somebody that walks with him and tells him what's going on in the world?
One explosion, Donald Trump quickly calling it a bomb. Hillary Clinton also calling it a bombing. There was also the device that exploded in New Jersey yesterday. And there have been an incident in Minnesota, stabbings at a mall in Minnesota. That person then shot by police. Tell me your reaction to these news stories from the past 24 hours and what you think the government needs to be doing on a day like today.
Well, first of all, just grateful that nobody got hurt. Secondly, law enforcement is on the scene. Responders are on the scene. If there's anything that I learned having been governor of New Mexico for 8 years, it's that they are really qualified. They really do get to the bottom of this.
29 people were injured. One is still hanging on for dear life. Come on, Gary. You're better than that. 850, back with Bill Browder from Nat Geo in a second on 720 WGN. All right, we were supposed to have on Bill Browder from National Geographic Channel. There's a series they have, a documentary series called Facing. And it features Pablo Escobar, maybe the biggest drug kingpin of all time, Saddam Hussein, Shug Knight, Schwarzenegger, all these legendary figures for various reasons. And the appearance is to promote Facing Putin, which premieres tomorrow night at 8 our time on National Geographic Channel. However, Mr. Browder was doing a hit with MSNBC, and that is still going on, so he will not be on the show today. So, but I will still recommend the show to you because I'm swell like that. So, again, it's tomorrow night at 8 o'clock if you choose to watch it on National Geographic Channel. At 8:55, continuing the Donald Trump line, do you know who Jane Goodall is?
Sure, sure.
She is...
the chimps, right?
An expert on your monkeys. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean Peter Tork. Hey, I don't mean Mickey Dolenz.
Not monkeys with double E.
No, I mean monkeys with a Y, right?
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump's antics remind Jane Goodall of primates she studied in the wild. That's a story from the weekend from the Huffington Post. Here's a quote. In many ways, the performances of Donald Trump remind me of male chimpanzees and their dominance rituals. In order to impress rivals, males seeking to rise in the dominance hierarchy perform spectacular displays, stamping, slapping the ground, dragging branches, and throwing rocks. Goodall added, the more vigorous and imaginative the display, the faster the individual is likely to rise in the hierarchy, the longer he's likely to maintain that position. Now, I've not seen Trump drag branches or throw rocks, but I do get the comparison. Bragging about his hand size and the size of his little Trump. You know, the insults, the loudness, See, this is the whole reason he doesn't want a moderator for the first debate or for any of the debates, because he wants to out-loud Hillary Clinton. Out-loud mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton. Donald Trump, giant chimpanzee or billionaire from New York, you decide. At 8:57, there are 50 days until the election. We still have a hideous choice to make. And the hideous choice is between the blowhard and the liar. And you know who those two characters are. Though it's hard not to, you know, put liar on Trump, too, because the guy just cannot tell the truth. You know, I haven't taken the time to quantify who's lying more. But Trump, the only way Trump knows the truth is it walks up, slaps him in the face. Then he denies it slapped him in the face. But Donald Trump is currently gaining the polls more and more every minute of every day. And the Democrats and Hillary Clinton are in a full five-alarm panic, and frankly, they ought to be. So Trump scares me, Hillary scares me, but I will not, shall not, cannot, Dr. Seuss, in this lifetime, vote for the talking hairpiece from New York. Not going to happen. Coming up on 9 o'clock, my friend Tom Dreesen and my friend Tim Klue, both next hour on 720 WGN.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Dean Richards was talking about this last hour. My friend Tom Dreesen, an evening with Tom Dreesen celebrating a life in comedy. Dean will host it. It's next Tuesday night at the Museum of Broadcast Communications on North State Street here in Chicago. Tickets are only $12, which is great. 50% off for museum members. You can go online at museum.tv. And Tom Dreesen's here. Do you have this link on your website? Can they go to your website?
Yes, you can go to tomdreesen.com. It's kind of fun. They asked me, could we honor you?
And okay.
I said, okay. But you know what they're going to do? Dean's going to interview me for like an hour, and they'll show film clips of all the things we're talking about and how you got started in Chicago, how you go from Harvey, where I was born and raised, Harvey, to Hollywood.
Right.
And the clubs we had to work in those days, there were no comedy clubs in those days.
Right.
So I'm going to take them up where we worked the Chitlin Circuit on the South Side. Tim Reed and I, we were a comedy team, up to finally making it to Mr. Kelly's.
Where was Mr. Kelly's?
Gibson Steakhouse.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, and that was the place, man. If you got to Mr. Kelly's, next stop, New York, L.A., right?
That's right. It was a big time. When you made to Mr. Kelly's, the owners of that place, George Marienthal and Oscar Marienthal, were geniuses. They would go to New York, all around the country, and they'd find some young singer or comedian,
right,
like a young girl named Bette Midler or a young girl named Barbara Streisand,
right,
who were making $250 a week in New York. And they said, come to Chicago, we'll triple that. We'll pay you $750 for 1 week, and then we're going to double that triple on your next contract.
Right.
So they would come here, whoever it was, say, oh, great. They get $750, and they'd hold that contract till they became a big star,
sure,
and then they'd come back here and be headlined for $1,500 a week.
Yeah, which was huge dough.
Yeah, and everybody honored that deal except Barbara Streisand. She paid $15,000 to buy out of it.
Oh, really?
You know, okay. But that's okay with Oscar and George.
Yeah, okay, we'll take it. My friend Tom Dreesen doesn't get enough credit for reinventing the stand-up comedy world. David, I don't know if you know this, but in the late 70s, really the mid to late 70s, when everybody who became anybody was coming up, and it was Tommy, it was Letterman, you know, young Robin Williams, Shamling eventually, and some of these other guys, comedians weren't getting paid. And there was an organized strike in and around the Comedy Store, which is the main venue in Hollywood. And you got picked to run the strike because you were a grown man that actually had some business experience and knew how to talk to people.
Yeah, I was a little. Every night I would go on stage with these unknowns.
But you didn't have to do that. I think you deserve more credit for this. To me, this is the same in sports where people go, do you know your history? Comedians need to know their history and to know if you ever made a dollar, as we all have, because people laughed on stage at what you were doing. It's because you fought for it. You didn't have to do that.
No, thank you. There's a book written called I'm Dying Up Here by William Needleseeder that explains that whole bit. Because we had a kid commit suicide. One of our comedians committed suicide afterward when he couldn't get back on. And so they wrote a book, which, by the way, now Showtime is doing a series called I'm Dying Up Here.
Are they really?
And I'm a consultant on the series, and we'll probably get a couple roles on it, too. But it'll start airing in December, you know. Funny you brought that up. I didn't come here to plug that.
No. But I just, people think they know you. There's lots of stories from your past that, you know, you don't talk about, and I think they're worthy of mentioning, including the fact that as my friend for all these years, I want you to convince your best friend, your very good friend, David Letterman, to cut the friggin' beard. What is going on with that beard?
I told him the other day, I said, you know, you look a little bit like Gabby Hayes. Do you remember Gabby Hayes? And then I said, are you going to be the Santa Claus at Macy's next year? Why not? You know. But I texted him the other day at Wrigley Field because him and I had taken him to Wrigley Field. And I said, I'm typical David Letterman. I said, I'm at Wrigley Field watching a Cub game in beautiful Chicago. He said, tell Harry Carey I said hello.
Right, why not? Why not? And by the way, you're the only guy that's got Harry's number these days.
Yeah.
Aren't you going to sing?
Yes, Tuesday night I'm singing at Wrigley Field for me and Joe Mantegna hold the record. I've done it every year. I think this is 15 or 16 years, every year since Harry passed away. So I'm singing Tuesday night, and I'm throwing out the first pitch, too.
That's cool. Well, you actually have a pretty good voice, too, so that's fun for you, I know.
Well, I don't know if I have a good voice. But, you know, you follow Harry Carey. That's not hard to do. You know, one year I followed Ditka, Mike Ditka. I sounded like Pavarotti. You know?
Yeah, there's no question. Did you ever hear Ozzy Osbourne's?
Oh, the reason that I was supposed to sing that day, WGN called me and said, do you mind if we bump you? Because Ozzy had a series or something there at WGN. Do you mind if we bump you? I said, no, I don't mind at all. And that night, he just destroyed it.
Yeah, yeah. And you know who else was surprisingly bad, but he was drunk as a skunk, was Kid Rock.
Yeah.
And Jeff Garlin had a story about that. Kid Rock at the end, and you know this, at the end, you're supposed to go, let's get some runs.
Yeah.
And, of course, lately the Cubs haven't been behind that often. Let's get some more runs. But at the end, Garland leans in and says, say, let's get some runs. And Kid Rock yells out to the crowd, let's get some lunch. So everybody left and went to Murphy's.
I'm surprised you didn't say, let's get some drugs.
Yeah, right. The other flip on that. But are you excited about these Cubs? You got to be. Yeah,
oh, God, I can't tell you. I mean, you know, out in the West Coast, that's all we do. All our Cub fans, whenever they're on, we turn it on and we exchange phone calls in Texas back and forth. And yeah, this is an exciting year.
It's been phenomenal.
When you think you've got this incredible infield and the oldest guy is 26.
How about that for the rest of baseball?
Oh, wow.
And for me, Santo and Billy, or Santo and Ernie, I should say, are pulling the strings.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we hope so. I said earlier when we were up talking, I was being interviewed, and the guy said, are all you old-time Cub fans, tell the truth now, you old-time Cub fans, you think that it's not going to happen, some jinx? And I said, sure, us old-time Cub fans, but young Cub fans don't think that way at all, nor does that young team, they don't think like that at all.
No, that's why I think Joe Maddon's so important, because he can keep him on that page, right?
Marinini. I did this golf tournament the other day, and we had a long talk. He's Italian from, as you know, Hazleton, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, yeah.
And his grandfather came over. It was a plumber, and there was so much prejudice against Italians in those days that he changed his name to Madden Plumbing, so he got more work.
right, because he shortened it up. Suddenly nobody knew he was the guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy, Joe.
He's a good guy. He's a little nutty.
Little nutty.
In all the right ways, though.
You know, he asked me would I do his, and you should do this, Steve, his golf tournament next year is in March in Arizona in spring training. Ooh. So I'm going to go there and do my one-man show on Evening of Laughter and Memories of Sinatra.
I may come out and be your valet.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a show coming up Saturday. I want to talk about that in a second, and also more coming up with Tom Dreesen. But the book you mentioned, you didn't mention your own book. If you really want to see how Tom Dreesen got from here to L.A. and have a real understanding of what the golden age of stand-up comedy was, and getting bumped from Carson how many times before you got on?
I got on the fourth time.
Three channels. Everybody in the universe, you tell everybody in the universe, tonight's a night, you had to make all those calls. There wasn't email. You had to call everybody back and say, next time. Three different times.
Pretty soon they started thinking I was lying. Then the fourth time I'm in makeup, and Fred DeCordova came in the dressing room, and he said, in the makeup room, and he said, I got bad news for you. I said, what? He said, you're going on tonight.
And you killed, and the rest. How many Carsons did you do?
61.
That's unbelievable.
61 appearance time.
Well, you know what? You've had quite a life there, Junior.
Yeah.
It's 918. More with Tom Dreesen in just a second. TomDreesen.com is a website, right?
Yes, TomDreesen.com.
Everything related to Tom is there. More in just a moment on 720 WGN. Can't hear that music without getting little goosebumps.
Yeah, me. I just got a little chill when I heard that. That was
closest cool. I ever got was walking out and standing on the star. You actually stood out and worked 61 times.
Yeah, that was... That first night show, there's no describing. In those days, I was just explaining to Mary here, in those days, wherever you went in America, people say, what do you do for a living? You say, I'm a stand-up comedian. The next question out of their mouth would be, oh, yeah? You ever been on Johnny Carson?
Yeah.
If you hadn't been on Carson, in the eyes of America, you hadn't arrived.
Can you explain, it's hard to understand without doing it, but can you explain how your life changes literally overnight back then?
I was in the unemployment line. My wife left me three times because she hated stand-up comedy, but
right.
I finally convinced her to come back with me. We had the kids out on the West Coast. I was struggling for rent money. I was drawing unemployment. And the next day, I got bumped three times, as you know, but the next day after I did my first Tonight Show, I've never stopped working since. CBS signed me to a development deal. The next day, a guy named Lee Curlin happened to be watching in New York.
About that.
I had no rent money, no grocery money, and the next day, they sent a check for $10,000. Now, this is in 1975. They sent a check for $10,000, and I got a check for like $2,000 every month for that year. That meant my rent, my groceries, everything's paid, and I could focus on my career.
And, you know, and the thing is, it's not just the TV money. It's you do club dates then. Your number goes up. You're probably getting film scripts, things like that, all based on one. And your first hit went so well that they started having you back regularly. And didn't you host it a bunch?
I didn't host the Tonight Show, but I hosted Letterman.
That's right.
You know, here's what happened. After that first Tonight Show, I started doing Dinah Shore, Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas, you know, Johnny Carson,
sure.
Midnight Special, Rock Concert, Soul Train, American Bandstand. I was doing Hollywood Squares, Match Game, $20,000 Pyramid. All Sammy and Company. Sammy Davis had a TV show. I did one appearance on the show. He took me on the road for 3 years. Your
incredible.
Life, your life,
that, and there is nothing that even remotely approaches that kind of instant success now.
No, because in their defense, television is just so vast now.
Yeah.
In those days, 20 million people watch the Tonight Show in those days.
Right.
You know.
So back then, and I don't want to make this just old day stuff, but back then, Letterman. And you become pals.
Yeah.
And Letterman's a good guy from the Midwest, so there's a bond there.
Yeah.
But some of the guys we come to know is some of the most famous guys. And I don't mean to knock a guy that's passed away because there was a lovely tribute to him last night. But some of the guys, Gary Shandling and others, crossed the comedian's picket line.
Yeah. Only he's the only one who of any renown the most of the, you know, Robin Williams, all those who were with us at that time, they, some of them wouldn't walk the picket line, but they wouldn't cross.
Right.
You know, and so the
and people, you were trying to get how much? $20?
You know, we were asking for $5 and $10. What happened is they were making millions of dollars a year, and the comics were getting zero.
Right.
Zero. And so all I asked her was, and by that time I was working Vegas.
And to her, by the way, is Mitzi Shore, yes. who took the club from her husband when they got a divorce and ran it and still runs it, I think, yes. Didn't she?
And made a fortune. And God bless her. Excuse me, I liked her. And I was, at that time, I was working Vegas, Tahoe, Reno, Atlantic City. I was working all over the
country.
Right. And I went to her and I said, pay the comic. You know, I was talking to her about it. And she just was adamant she did not want to pay the comedians. I said, you pay the waiters, you pay the waitresses, you pay the bartender, you pay the guy who cleans the toilets and the guy who parks the car. Why wouldn't you pay the comedians?
Because you don't have a show without the comedians.
Yeah, but she said, people don't come here for the comedians. They come here for to see the ambiance of the comedy store. I said, well, don't put any comedians on one night and see,
see how many people around. Come and put ambiance on the marquee.
And we later ended up getting $25 a set. And here's a bit of irony for you. That was 40 years ago, almost 40 years ago, 38 years ago, the comedians finally got paid $25 a set after the strike was over, after 8 weeks of walking a picket line. Today, at that same place, they get like $12.50. They've gone in reverse. And now here's what they do. Now, not the Laugh Factory. The Laugh Factory pays real good. He pays the comedians good. But here's the other irony. Now, if you want to get a spot, say, at those places, if you bring 20 people, they will give you a 20-minute spot. Now, those 20 people each pay $20 to get in, and then when they get in, they buy drinks. So, in other words, you're paying $500 or $600 to get a 20-minute spot.
Well, that's unbelievable. So what do we call that, Mitzi's revenge in some way?
Well, not only there, but all over the country. It's just a whole new world today for this. I really feel sad for the stand-up comedians today because it's a tough, tough road to hoe in my day, let alone today.
Aren't you involved with one of the clubs in town?
Laugh Factory, I got a couple shares in it, and so I go over there and I.
It's a good room.
It's a great room to do stand up in. I was there Saturday night. I dropped in, did 20 minutes, and it was a great crowd.
Well, they all love you. Where are you working Saturday?
Saturday night, I'm going to Saturday, September 24th. I'm going to Freedom Hall in Park Forest to do my one man show, An Evening of Laughter and Memories of Sinatra. It's a 90-minute show of stand-up comedy.
Right.
But then I go to a bar and a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I bring Frank back. I tell all the stories about a little boy from Harvey, Illinois, who heard Sinatra on the jukebox shining shoes while I was shining shoes. And then I take them from that little boy from Harvey who heard Sinatra on a jukebox to one day carrying his coffin in Beverly Hills, out of Beverly Hills Church. So I tell a lot of stories while pictures and video are coming on the screen, authenticating the story. So it's a lot of laughs and tears. I take them to the funeral. Then I close with a great monologue, having them laughing. But it's a fun night. If they want tickets, they can call 708-747-0580.
That's probably linked through your website too, right?
If people want to pop on. Yeah, you go to TomDreesen.com. It's a fun night in Park Forest, Illinois. And if you mention Steve Cochran, you might get a little bit off on your ticket.
No, if you mention Steve Cochran, he'll throw you out halfway through the show. We got a guy coming up. And because you're a Cub fan, I don't know what your time schedule is, but if you can hang around, you may want to do that. Eddie Miller is his name. Eddie was a ball boy, I believe, in 1952 for the Cubs.
Okay.
So because of the Cubs season, we just want to say hi to him. You know who else was a ball boy back then? Walter Jacobs.
Oh, no, that Bad Boy.
Or Bad Boy. Bad Boy.
I was Bad Boy in the 80s, but I was a grown man. Jim Fry let me
That's
be
right.
Bad
you
Boy.
You were Batman.
Yeah, 4 years in a row, yeah. And they let me hit batting practice and go out in the outfield. And then they let me announce the game when Harry Carey had the stroke.
I do remember that.
I was like a pig in slop.
Well, if you want to say hi to Eddie, stick around.
I would like to.
TomDreesen.com. More coming up in a second, including the big story next on 720 WGN. I remember the name Toby Atwell, Bob Rush, Hank Sauer, Phil Cavaretto, of course, and many, many others from the 1952 Chicago Cubs. We have a picture of the team, including a couple of famous bad boys. One, Eddie Miller, you're going to talk to in just a second, or hear from in just a second. The other, Walter Jacobson. Tom Dreesen, lifetime Cubs fan, is here. Get to my friend Tim Clue here in just a second as well. But let me first, should I talk to, all right, so should I talk to Michelle or Eddie first? Is Michelle going to introduce Eddie, or can I go right to Eddie? Let me go to Eddie here. on line 8. Good morning, Mr. Miller. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and
pleasure of meeting you.
And I mentioned the 1952 Cubs. Was that your bat boy year?
That was one of the years. I don't remember the exact years that they were.
Sure.
But I was bat boy for about 3-4 years.
Who was your favorite player on the team?
My favorite player on the team. Well, there was a lot of them. I could tell you some that weren't on the team at the time.
Okay.
Ron Santo.
Oh, sure. Sure, you love Santo.
Was a great player and a real nice guy.
How about Phil Cavaretta?
Phil Cavaretta was there, and he was a terrific guy, terrific person.
Let me get Tom Dreesen in here. Tom is a couple of years older than me, and not many, but he remembers those Cubs. Say hi to Mr. Miller.
Hey, Mr. Miller, this is Tom Dreesen. It's a pleasure to meet you. When I was a little boy, I used to go to Wrigley Field and watch the bat boy and just be so envious. I thought, how could you get a job like that? Do you remember how you got the job as a bat boy? Who was the one?
To be honest with you, I was a vendor at the ballpark. And I tried to get into, you know,
to become a bat boy.
So
to become the bat boy, and they wound up giving me the job 1 year, and I stayed about 4 years.
Well, let me talk to your daughter Michelle here for a second. He must have been pretty good at it, huh, Michelle?
He was fantastic. Yeah, I don't know if you saw the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
He was just as adorable then as he is now, and he was such a big Cubs fan that when he was a little boy, he spent so much time hanging around the ballpark, and finally, I think they got sick of him just hanging around.
You're right.
They gave him a job as a vendor, and he then became really good friends with Yosh, the clubhouse manager. Yeah.
Right. I was very close with Yosh, and I was, when they let him go after years, after I was there, I was very, very hurt about it.
Well, Eddie, I got to tell you, you won't remember this, but I met you many years ago with my friend Ron Santo and your friend Ron Santo. Ron used to have you up to the booth quite a bit, and I remember you coming up the booth, and I got to shake your hand.
Right. That was very nice. Thank you.
Well, it's an honor for me. And I know you're excited about this current team, but when you think about the old days of being a bat boy, what was the most important job? Was it pine tar? What was the number one thing you had to have ready for the guys?
Just to have their uniforms ready and I just loved the job. I really did. I would have done it for giving them money. You know?
thank goodness you're not managing the finances. But Eddie, it is a pleasure to meet you, my friend. And to me and Michelle, I'm sure you feel the same way. But to me, all the success this team is having this year, and Tom, you may feel the same way as well. This is for guys like Eddie.
No question.
This is for Eddie. This is for Ernie and Ron from the great beyond.
Right.
This is for you guys. This team this year and the success they're having, and if they get it done, God bless you, Eddie, because you're part of the history of this team.
Thank you very much. And I'm very honored that you're doing this.
Well, I got to tell you, Eddie, this is a big break for you. Being on WGN, I mean, you know. And I looked
WGN
at this picture.
WGN is my favorite station, believe me.
And Michelle, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm looking at this picture, Eddie. He was a good-looking dude. I bet he had girls chasing him all over.
A long line of them.
All right, you guys. Thanks for doing that. Hold the line, both of you, if you would. What a sweet guy, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice. All right, so Tom, what did you have to do? I don't see Tom Dreesen, and Tim Clue, jump in on this. I don't see Tom Dreesen walking around getting the players' uniforms ready.
No.
Did you do that, John?
No, when Jim Frey let me be bad boy for 4 years in the 80s, you know, with Ryan Sandberg and Rick Sutcliffe and Jody Davis.
By the way, that was when Tom was in town. He didn't actually give up show business for those 4 years.
No, I did it just when I
could just see you calling Sinatra going, hey, I'm going to need 4 years off. I'm going to go be bat boy for the Cubs.
I know. Even Letterman used to bust my chops. You don't go pick up the bat. You say, no, you don't. You don't pick up the bat. Yes, I do. You know, but I'd dress with them and hang out with them. And I'd appear like at Zany's, and then all the players and their wives would come to the show that night. You know,
sure.
That year, Greg Maddux was a rookie that year. Jamie Moyer was a rookie
that year. About
that. I get pictures of those guys.
Clue, you were sneaking into the park then.
Tom, when you handed them the bat at your age, were you Bat Boy or Batman?
You had to be Batman.
I would run out there. And Andre Dawson, when he hit his 400th home run, I was the first guy to greet him at the plate.
Didn't you take some grief from the other team?
Oh, everybody was giving me a bad
The other time. Guy, the guys on the other team, who was the biggest jerk from the guys that would visit? Like they'd see Tom Dreesen, Batman. Who gave you the most heat?
You know, nobody really. At Dodger Stadium one time, I was bat boy at Dodger Stadium.
Oh, Lasorda must have killed you.
Oh, Lasorda hated me. Lasorda thought I was a Dodger fan. When he found out I was a Cub fan, he wouldn't talk to me. He'd call me names. We had the toughest time after that.
Tommy Lasorda, pretty good at the name calling.
Oh God, we had him
what
and
a
I
mouth
used to,
on him.
We both went after each other. After a while, I got tired of him ragging me about being a Cub fan. I said to him one time, "Look, I said if you were in Las Vegas and there was Don Rickles on one side of the street and Tom Dreesen on the other side, who would you go see?" He said, "You don't compare yourself to Rickles." I said, "No, but my point is, I wouldn't be mad at you if you went to see Rickles."
That's a great story. Yeah, Tommy's a little tough.
Oh,
yeah.
he's
a weird guy, too, because he can be unbelievably sweet, right? You catch him on the right day, couldn't be a better guy.
Well, the other thing is he's got the shortest arms in baseball. You know, I roasted him one time, and I said, they got the idea in baseball, you know, slow motion.
Right.
They got Tommy Lasorda created that. They got the idea watching him go for a check.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't pay. He wouldn't pay because he never has. He's lived in L.A. for how many years? He's never bought a dinner.
No, never. Like opposite of Red Buttons. He never bought a dinner yet.
All right, stand by. Tim Clue, and you may be able to give Tim some advice on this. Tim's got his first book out.
Oh, Tim.
Yeah, and Tom's written a book or two himself, so stand by. First at 9:47, back with more in a second, and Bill and Wendy at 10 on WGN. Got two very funny guys in the studio, Tom Dreesen and Tim Clue. Tim, you've heard on this show for years. No matter where I've been fired, Tim's usually been around one point or another. And nice to see you again. Tim has his first book out.
Congratulations.
Written Tim. With?
My writing partner, Mr. Spike Manton. That's right.
And Spike, of course, on the game for a while. But Spike's been on the radio in Chicago for years and years. You know Spike, don't you?
Sure.
Stand up as well.
What's the title of the book?
Well, it's a children's book. Steve's bearing the lead here intentionally.
Well, yeah, because the lead is the punchline. The children's book on Donald Trump called?
Patty on the Stump, inspired by the presidential campaign.
Yes, and it's a book for adults to read to the children?
Yeah, it's a book. It's a window of opportunity to address leadership and, you know, the animus that has existed in this campaign. And, my daughter, the quick story is that my six-year-old daughter, Tom, actually asked me why Donald Stump wanted to be president. She said that.
Yeah, and out of the mouths of babes, because Stump he is.
And I started to draw on a nail. I mean, I didn't even correct her. I'm like, Stump. That's brilliant. Stump. He's a stump.
And then you said, go talk to your mother. I have to write a book now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, it's an allegory in search of a lawsuit.
Now, don't drop words like allegory on this show.
I can do it.
Now, the animation, the drawings, as I like
to call them. The
animation.
It's 3D animation.
If you move the book.
We had Pixar do this, Steve.
If you move the book, it's animated. But the artwork in the book is tremendous.
Oh, thanks. That's nice. I obviously didn't draw it.
Who did?
Lynn Peralta, an amazing illustrator out of Cleveland who has a greater pedigree in the drawing business than, let's say, you or I.
All right. Where's the book? Where do we get it?
Well, Amazon.com or Eckhart Press. Prefer Eckhart Press if you want to help out the our friends who help us put the book together
sure. In
a expedited fashion.
Spell Eckhart.
I can't do it.
Okay.
No, let me do it right here.
E-C-K. Yeah, it's on the book, I'm guessing.
I gave you a press release, Steve. Don't make me spell. I'm a listexic.
Yeah, I think it's E-C-K-H-A-R-D-T. Does that sound right?
Yes, it's one of those.
Yeah, Eckhart Press.
Wait, right here. E-C-K-H-A-R-T-Z.
O-T-Z. Eckhart's.
Eckhart's Press. And they're great guys. Rick Kempfer and Dave Stern.
Yeah, Rick is a good guy. He's a radio producer forever. Amazing and you can guy. Order online?
Yes. Okay. And it's like I said, it's on Amazon too. Patty and the Stump. Or you can go to
Facebook. Can you read it to your kids?
Oh, it is absolutely. It is. If your children, for some reason, had no idea that the presidential campaign was going on, it literally reads as a maniacal stump trying to take over the prairie and attempting to seize control for control's sake.
So it's true.
It's a true story. It's a fictional story based on a true story for kids.
Does Hillary Clinton play a role in the book?
Absolutely not. We are being apolitical here.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
It's more about, well, look.
The story of a stump.
A story of a stump trying to take over, seize control over a prairie. And the critters, he convinces them to throw the prairie dogs out. And the prairie dog is kind of the media. So that would be you, Steve.
Here's the most important question, Tom. You know this when it comes to a children's book. Mm-hmm. How many pages?
That's a very good question. I think it's less than 32.
Oh, there you go.
And look, it reads, I mean, look, it's a flip book.
Yeah, a lot of illustrations, and they're big. Tom, your book with Tim had well over 150 pages.
No, yeah, many.
Yes. And limited illustrations and only a few photos.
And Steve, you know, we could actually call Donald Trump and actually get some, reactions to this.
Does the Trump campaign know about this book?
We could find that out. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. We can only hope that they do. Maybe they would tweet about it.
Have you gotten any reaction from the Trump people on the book?
We have sent it directly to the Trump people.
Because I will be kicked out of this country if he wins on November 8th. I will be thrown out of this country. There's no question about it. He will deport me. So will you be deported as well?
I don't think I'm on the list, although I'm on many other lists.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Yeah, that's for sure. That's absolutely for sure. So when you're writing your book,
mm-hmm.
how much discipline did that take compared to the rest of the career?
You know, it's a long story. I kept fighting. I wanted Mike Downey to write our book, right, with Tim Reed and I. And he recommended Ron Rappaport because Mike was busy at the time. And so we sat down with Ron, and it took a long time. But the stories, they just flowed out of both Tim and I when we sat down with Ron sat with me, and I told him every story, and then Tim sat with him, and then we sat together. And but most of
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and it's a lot of work selling it afterward. going out on tour. Tim and I went out on tour,
and you have to come up with every connection you've ever had, mm-hmm. and you have to ask everyone you've ever known, hey, would you mind if I came on and mentioned the book?
Yeah,
everybody ever. This is your life now, Tim Kluge.
All I know is Steve Cochran and maybe Tom Dreesen.
and I'll do the best I can.
And Mary Vanderbilt. Can I go home with you, Mary, and we can push the book over there?
Tim would like you to work it into the traffic report.
Here's what you do, Tim.
If you get in the traffic report, people will buy.
Oh, there's no
question. Social media. That's what you do. You get these little quotes, these characters that you've got in here that are so delightful, and you get them on that social media. That's how you sell it.
Get me out a legal pad. I'm taking notes.
Right, take notes. Yeah. All right, let's get the plugs. Wide world of plugs here. Saturday night where?
Saturday night at Freedom Hall in Park Forest. It's a wonderful night around 7:30. You can call the number I gave earlier, and I don't have it with me now.
And TomDreesen.com.
An evening of laughter and memories of Sinatra. You're going to have a lot of fun.
And then next Tuesday, you and Dean Richards at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, 360 North State Street. You can also link to that or just go to museum.tv. TomDreesen.com. And the title of the book, Tim Kluge?
Well, I'm with Murray Vanderbilt, plugging Patty and the Stump. That's what I'm doing.
Okay, tell me again the title, though.
Patty and the Stump.
Patty and the Stump.
At pattyandthestump.com. And we have an audio
book. Oh, you have a website.
We have a website, an audio book coming out less than a week. And we're going to translate it to Spanish and send it to the president of Mexico for all the children down there.
Oh, that's a sweet idea.
I'm seriously. Right. We are traveling to Mexico with
that's
the
a
book.
Sweet idea.
Are you going to help cover that?
You're not going to get
Dreesen
back into the
said,
country.
I need to know you.
Now, listen,
to push
once
the
you
book.
Go to Mexico, you're not getting back.
You don't think so?
No, you got no shot of getting back in once you're out.
Not because I'm in trouble, because I just won't know how to get out.
That's exactly right. That's right. You wouldn't be able to find the door. Patty and the Stump. Thank you, guys. Thank both of you. And Tommy, I'll
happy
see you
to
soon.
Be here.
An honor to be here with Tom Dreesen.
You're darn right it is.